Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Tell You, a bespoke podcast series from the Irish Examiner with myself, Paul Hosford. In this series, we'll be taking a look at some of the most dramatic moments in recent Irish political history from the unique perspective of one of the key players. This week, we look at how in just 8 months, Sinn Féin went from losing half of its council seats to claiming a seismic victory in the 2020 general election. From the low of May 2019, Sinn Féin has since become one of the three large parties in the Dáil and has set new polling records in opinion polls. With me to discuss the party's bounce back is party spokesperson on Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Dublin Fingal TD, Louise O'Reilly. Louise, very welcome.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. We're going to get to the gap between 2019 and 2020 in a bit, but if we go back to 2016, that's when you were elected. It's kind of when Sinn Féin as a political force, the way they are now, kind of came to fruition. We have a clip.
Clearly, Fianna Fáil drove the country over the cliff. The bus fell off the wheels, whatever way you wish to describe it.
Enda said one thing Saturday, said another Sunday, said another Monday. It could be something different tomorrow, you know?
There is an alternative to this bad government and to the three main establishment parties. They're every day becoming closer in their cosy consensus, their very smug consensus.
Was it a good election for Sinn Féin?
It was a very good election for Sinn Féin. We went from 14 seats. We're now, as we speak, sitting in 22 seats. That's at least 60% increase in our representation. We have developed our vote fourfold. We've also got a huge spread. There are very few regions in the state that there aren't Sinn Féin TDs elected. And if they weren't elected this time, they sure are going to be elected the next time if they continue with the work that they're doing. So we're going to go back with an increased team.
Louise, if we go back to 2016, Sinn Féin gained 9 seats. That was Gerry Adams speaking afterwards. When it was 22, it became 23. Yourself included, increased the vote share to 13.8%. At that time, did you feel overall that the party had hit expectations? Were you disappointed? What was the feeling after 2016?
I think the feeling was we'd done well. We knew that there was a definite swing against the government parties. I think that was kind of obvious to everybody from fairly early on. And I think it was a good election for us. I mean, there were some areas where maybe you hit the crossbar a little bit. But as Gerry said in that clip, you know, you were laying the foundation, so you knew that you were going to be in a good position, where there to be another election. And if you cast your mind back to that time, and if you remember when, you know, how volatile things were, there was a possibility that there was going to be another election. It seems very remote now, looking back, because there was 4 years of government that came after it. But actually, at that time, there was a very real possibility that we could be bounced into an election, you know, in the case where a government couldn't be formed, or, because there was ongoing talks, they went on for a very, very long time. So, you know, there was that prospect that, you know, there was going to be another election very quickly, and the feeling that we would have done even better in that. But no, the definitely we knew we had a decent election. Absolutely.
Your own selection was quite interesting, because there was talk of you being put into Dublin Fingal as it is now to essentially take out James Riley. He had been the Minister for Health. He was the Minister for Children at the time. Does that speak to either where Sinn Féin's ambitions were at that time, or does it speak to a weariness with the Fine Gael Labour coalition, or is it both?
Well, I think there wasn't any talk, actually, of me taking out James Riley in the run-up to the election. That was chatter that happened after the election. Nobody said it to me. in the run into the election. I did a fair amount of media interviews and it wasn't put to me in that way. I don't think that people were thinking necessarily that a voter would switch from Fine Gael to Sinn Féin. As it was, James Riley lost his seat and I took the last seat. I took the last seat in a five-seater. So that's the very essence of not being complacent. And I'm not. And I wouldn't be. And I'm not now. And you shouldn't ever be in politics. It's the wrong way to be. But I think we were ambitious, definitely, going into that 2016 election. It was my first time. So I'm not necessarily qualified to talk about previous runs out, because it was my first time to ever put my name forward for any elected position, actually, as it goes. So it was, there was an ambition there, definitely. And we could see that there was a lot of potential there. And you could see that potential then in the Dáil and, with the front bench when the government was finally formed and our front bench was appointed. I think you could see that we were definitely ambitious, but I don't think we, if you're asking me, did we go in with a strategy to take out James Riley? No. We didn't. That wasn't the strategy. The strategy was to go and try and talk to our voters. Like, I spent a full year in Fingal, knocking doors Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Thursday nights and all day Saturday. And that was my beat, as well as my full-time job as a union organiser in SIPTU, which was fairly demanding. But I did that to try to get to know the constituency, get to know the people and let people get to know me. And on the back of that, we had an idea. There was a seat there, all right. But we had to go out and mine for those votes and go out and talk to people face to face. It took a long time. But my thought was to get as many votes as I could, not to target any one particular. The government were already hugely in the firing line. You could see that that was happening. It was pretty obvious where it was going to go for the two government parties.
You've touched on it there previously. The negotiations about forming a government in 2016 took a long time, and when it did become the minority government that we know, it was the confidence and supply agreement between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. How much of a bonus was that for Sinn Féin? Because you effectively staked your claim as the official opposition in a lot of ways. Was there talk of this being kind of a gift to Sinn Féin in a lot of ways?
Well, yeah, when you have the party that's supposed to be the party of opposition supporting the government, I mean, remember, we're going to talk about 2019 in a while, there were two, if my memory serves, there were two confidence motions in 2019, both about ministers who were not doing well at all in their brief by any measure at all, Simon Harris and Owen Murphy, because 2019, as we know, is the year when homelessness figures got over 10,000. So there were two confidence motions there. And Fianna Fáil abstained on those. Now, that was, I think that was difficult for them. I think the one on housing was especially difficult for them, given the way the figures were going. But like, they effectively absented themselves as opposition. So it wasn't so much a gift to us, that they took themselves out and there was a gap there to be filled. And Sinn Féin was more than equal to the task of filling it, I think.
And I suppose, electorally or even from in terms of as a party, did you feel like you got more attention, more media attention, more traction with the public because you were the ones on the opposition benches who were shouting loudest?
Yeah, we were the only ones offering an alternative. That's the thing. There was broad agreement on policy. You can see now the ease with which Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael sit together in government. They agree on policy terms. It's very often what you read when there's dissent, it's usually about personalities, but they agree broadly on policy terms, and that became more and more obvious. Sinn Féin had alternatives to the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael consensus, and we did get an opportunity to showcase those. But I don't know if we got more or less media. I mean, we got more media attention by virtue of the fact that we were a bigger party, and that's how that works. And you'll know that better than I do. But I don't know how that compares to the previous Dáil, because I wasn't in the previous Dáil, so I don't know. But there was a gap there for an opposition party because there was so much consensus between the parties formerly known as the two big parties. And when they agreed so much, I think the public wanted to see if there was an alternative. And if there was an alternative, what was that alternative? What did it look like? What did it sound like? What would it mean for health, for housing, for all of the big questions that people had on their mind? So I think the gap was created by the two parties formerly known as the big ones. And we went in and filled that gap.
Just 18 months then after the general election, there was a major shift in your party, something that people probably hadn't foreseen for a long, long time, finally came to pass.
Republicanism has never been stronger. This is our time. We will grow even stronger in the future. But leadership means knowing when it's time for change. And that time is now. I will not be standing for the Dáil in the next election.
Under Gerry Adams' leadership, Sinn Féin has become not only the largest nationalist party in Northern Ireland, but the third largest group here in the Irish Dáil, or Parliament. And they're hoping to be in government here in the not-so-distant future.
When Martin McGuinness was buried, Gerry Adams carried his coffin. So too did Mary Lou MacDonald, who officially becomes Sinn Féin's new leader on Saturday. Her challenge now is to broaden the party's appeal to a younger generation that never knew the Troubles.
Ireland is changing. A new and better Ireland is emerging. To those who are impatient for equality and progress, I say this is your time. This is your home. This is your Ireland. Sinn Féin is your party. So let us seize the day. Together, let us build a new, united Ireland. Gurumila Mahagu Vakorja, Up the Republic, and Fublacht Abu.
The resignation of Gerry Adams was probably something that a lot of people couldn't imagine. Sinn Féin without Gerry Adams not being the president of Sinn Féin. What was the reaction internally once word spread around November 2017? Were you surprised? Were you worried about the future of the party?
I know, we weren't worried. I suppose there was a bit of surprise. But, like, you know, we knew Gerry wasn't going to lead the party forever. We knew that that the time would come when he was going to get, now I'm saying going to get a well-earned rest, but anyone who follows him on social media knows it's anything but a well-earned rest. But anyway, he might have had an idea in his head at the time that he was getting a well-earned rest. But we could see that there was going to be a generational change and that change was going to happen. The same as with anything, you know, when it was finally announced, I think it was a surprise for people. Even though, as I say, we knew he wasn't going to lead the party forever, but it's still, yeah, when once a date was put on it and a time frame established, yeah, I think there was. And there was, you know, obviously a huge outpouring in the party. Like, I was at that Ardèche, and, I mean, we didn't leave the hall for hours after it. People queuing up to shake Gerry's hand and, you know, to wish him well and you know, to just see that kind of, which would be expected, obviously, at our own Ardèche. But, like, yeah, so there was, and you know, people were, I suppose they were, yeah, we weren't surprised, but it seems with all these things, when it happened, it was a surprise, if you know what I mean, even though it was somewhat expected.
You were at the Gerry Adams Ardèche, you were on the top table then when Mary Lou MacDonald gave her speech in Belfast. But there was no election there. Was there ever any kind of thought to anyone else running? Was there any chatter within the party that somebody else might challenge for the leadership?
Well, I had the honour of seconding Mary Lou's nomination. I think that anyone that knows me would have known pretty well who I was going to support. So it's unlikely, if there was chatter, that would have come my direction anyway. I don't think there was. Mary Lou was pretty much the front runner. But as I say, if that was going on, there was nobody going to be talking to me about it, because they'd most likely know there was no point.
you mentioned the generational change there. Was there ever any worry about that? Because I suppose Sinn Féin, in a lot of ways now, is a coalition between people who would have been, I suppose, what you would call traditional Republicans or people who are kind of more dyed-in-the-wool Republicans, and then people who are of the left, mostly around urban areas in the Republic of Ireland. Was there ever any worry about Mary Lou MacDonald being able to hold together that coalition?
Well, there's left Republicans as well, Paul. So.
No, of course there are
left Republicans. I'm joking. No, I don't think so. I don't recall there being a worry. But like any change is difficult. Do you know? I mean, you have to manage change. You know, people maybe sometimes are a bit resistant to change. But I don't remember there being a worry about it. I think people were very familiar with Mary Lou. You know, I mean, she was the last Uachtaráin for years, and people would have known her. She was a very prominent figure, not just within the party, but a very prominent figure in the Irish media as well, and very well known. So I don't think people were kind of worried about, well, what's she going to be like? We knew what she was going to be like, because people had been working with her for years.
Her first electoral challenge was the 2018 presidential election. Sinn Féin lost about half of its vote share in that with Leah Rita. What went wrong there, or what happened?
I think we underestimated how popular Michael D. Higgins was. I think that's fair to say. It wasn't a good election. I have somewhere, if I dig it out, I have a degree in English, but I'm not going to be able to find the words to say to mix it up otherwise and make it a good election. It wasn't. Daniel, I think you and I were on News Talk the morning after with it. I did the first round of media. It wasn't the most pleasant round of media I've ever had to do in my life, I'll be honest, but it was done. I mean, it was what it was. We had underestimated how popular the incumbent was, and we had to learn from that.
Does that mean that you should have run a more high-profile candidate? Should you have stayed out of the whole thing altogether?
No, I don't think we should have stayed out of the whole thing. I mean, we had a discussion and there was a fairly robust discussion about why we should or shouldn't contest the election. And the feeling was that we should contest the election because it is an electoral contest and we shouldn't voluntarily take ourselves out of electoral contests. But we had seriously underestimated how popular the incumbent was, and the fact that it wouldn't have been possible. I don't know, but I don't think it would have been possible for any candidate from any party to catch Michael D.
And does that kind of indicate that maybe Leonie Rita hit her ceiling at around 90,000 votes? Was that all you were ever going to get?
I don't think so. It's hard to know. With a different set of candidates and a different election, you're going to get a different outcome. But sure, you know, we could be all day speculating about that. I think the incumbent was hugely, hugely popular, and that became very apparent once the election campaign started.
And then a couple of months later was the next election campaign, the 2019 local and Europeans. We have a clip of that.
Brian, thank you very much. And I'm joined here in the RDS by the president of Sinn Féin, Mary Lou MacDonald. You're very welcome. Thank you for taking the time to join us. You've already said today you're disappointed at what seems to be emerging when it comes to the local elections. How disappointed are you? I have seen some analysis today which has said the tide has gone out on Sinn Féin.
Well, look, 5 years ago we had a Sinn Féin surge. We trebled our local authority seats. We won 100 extra seats, and it was a great day out for us. And our objective in this campaign was to hold that. And unfortunately, we haven't managed to hold all of those additional seats. We'll hold many of them, but not all. So, of course, it's disappointing. I mean, anybody who fights an election campaign, who's an activist, knows the level of effort that candidates, that party activists, that their families put in. And of course it's disappointing, particularly for people who have served their communities over the last 5 years and who wanted to continue that work. On a personal level, I feel that for them. But I also would say this, that we're activists, that elections come, elections go, you have good days out, you have challenging days out, and at the end of each you learn, you reflect, you dust yourself down and you get back to business.
78 council seats lost, you know, vote share down 5.6 percentage points. Just one European seat won. What went wrong in May 2019?
Well, I think, that was a bad day. I was actually with, I was standing beside Mary Lou when she did that interview, and it was a very sombre day in the RDS, most definitely, and in the count centres. And what she said there is right. You know, the effort that people put in, and you see this, you cover election campaigns, the toll that it takes on your family, you know, and it was a very disappointing day, absolutely. As to what went wrong, well, let me look at just for a moment at the thing that did actually sort of go right. Okay, so we lost a lot of really good people, really, really good, hardworking councillors, but we didn't lose them as activists. So they didn't, they lost their seat. But I mean, I can talk about Malachy Quinn, who was a very hardworking councillor based in Balbriggan in North County Dublin. He lost his seat, but within 2 weeks, he was back out rapping doors with me. We did not lose them any of them as activists. So there was a positive out of that. They, you know, it and I'm not saying that there was not many positives, right? So you'll indulge me to find one or two, I'm sure. So that was a positive. Those people stayed with us. They stayed with us as activists. And as Mary Lou said, we are activists. We're an active party. I don't think we got our vote out. I don't think we did enough, because if you fast forward just a couple of months to the by-election in Dublin Midwest, there was a very targeted campaign to get our vote out. And when we focused on getting our vote out, we did get the vote out. But we didn't have that kind of campaign. And we had people who'd been working away. They'd been doing very good work, but maybe they hadn't been doing that thing of knocking on all the doors and saying, well, I got you that cross. And people thought their work would speak for itself. Their presence in the community would speak for itself. The fact that they were always around would speak for itself. And we didn't do enough to enthuse our voters to get them to come out. And there was, and I know this from talking to people up in Balbriggan, there was a perception that, well, sure, Malachy was always there and he'll always be there. And he'll always be, and he is active, you see, that's the thing. And, there, you know, even though he's not a councillor anymore, he's still every bit as active in his own community. So, like, we would have had that. We're thinking about it now. We had a message, and I don't know that we sold it well. And we also didn't impress on our voters enough how important it was for them to come out.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
For us,
there was a swing to the left as well. The Greens had their surge in 2019, just the way Sinn Féin had theirs in 2014. But a lot of the Green surge focused on the environment. It focused on a broader national issue. Do you think that maybe, I suppose, Sinn Féin's focus on being that local activist, on having that local activism, maybe misread the room or missed the national mood in 2019?
I think there was a number of factors. I certainly never characterised the Green Party as a left party, Paul, but that's maybe just my politics. But there were a number of factors there. That was one of them, that there was a party with a single issue and a very clear message. And, you know, we maybe didn't have that, and we didn't have that level of coherence, which, you know, looking back on, we probably should have had, and maybe tighter messaging. But again, you know, we had a lot of really hard working councillors, and I noticed, I saw them. I mean, between Dara and Anne and Malachy, I would have seen it in my own area, but I saw it right across the board. They were very, very hard working, but they weren't doing that kind of knocking on people's doors and going, aren't you glad you have me now, because look what I got for you. They were allowing the work to speak for itself. And again, yeah, any party with a single issue is a very clear and easy to understand, very clearly defined message. But yeah, it wasn't a good day for us, so disputing it.
Was there any surprise within the party about how bad it actually turned out to be?
Yeah, I think there was. And because if you actually look at the results, we came very, very close in a huge number of seats. So when we lost, it was down to the final count, and it was that way. I know in my own area, I was in the RDS, it was that way for a lot of seats. So it was it came down to a handful of votes in an awful lot of cases. It wasn't that we didn't lose massive support, but what we lost was just the capacity to those key votes to get people out. I mean, look, at the end of the day, they're the votes that matter, the ones that you didn't get where you hit the crossbar. But we did hit the crossbar. It wasn't like, we lost votes. Absolutely, we didn't get our vote out. You know, we'll hold our hands up to that. But there was a lot of areas where we came very, very close. So in that, when you know it's going to be tight, but you're still in with a shout. And, you know, there were candidates all over who were right. They were in count centres till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, because we were still in with a shout for the last seat, and nobody knew where that was going to go. And I was involved in some of those counts. There were others all over the country involved in those counts as well. And they were tight. So you wouldn't necessarily see that. If you're still in the shake-up at the very last minute for a seat, you don't know that you're not going to get it until, you know, pretty close to the final declaration.
A lot of other parties would, at this point, maybe be questioning the leadership after those results rolled in. Was there ever any murmurings in Sinn Féin about Mary Lou McDonald's leadership?
No, there wasn't. And as I say, if there was, I didn't hear it. But I don't know, there wasn't. I mean, we recognised that we had made mistakes and that we had had a bad day out at the local and European elections. There was no dispute in that. But the message from Mary Lou, and you heard it there, was we're a party of activists. You know, we had a surge 5 years previous to that, and we, you know, we were experiencing the opposite end of a surge 5 years on. But I mean, Mary Lou was fairly determined. You can hear it there in her voice. Yes, it was a bad day out for us. We, you know, you couldn't but be disappointed with the result, but we were going to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and go again, and go again we did.
You touched on the Dublin Midwest by-election in November 2019. Mark Ward won the seat there. Was there any sense there that was a harbinger for what might come in February 2020, or was it seen as just a well-run by-election campaign?
I think there was a lot of people saying, well, look at now, that just proves when we get our vote out, we can get our vote out, and that's what we need to do. So there's people saying that. But, you know, like, if you go back to Christmas 2019 in Leinster House, I think everybody was nervous. Do you know, we knew there was going to be an election. I mean, much and all as the government were talking themselves up, the dogs in the street knew an election was coming. It was pretty obvious there was going to be an election. And naturally, you're nervous because you're thinking about what had happened previously. Obviously, looking at the local election results and thinking, Jesus, you know, how is this going to go? But the boost that we got from Mark Ward's election can't be underestimated. It was a huge boost to us, and actually it proved the message, and it was always Gerry's message, and now it's Mary Lou's message, which is our vote is there. If we can get our vote out, we need to keep in touch, stay rooted in our communities, stay relevant, and go back to people when we need their support and get them out. So when we go and we get our vote out, that, you know, when we make that concerted effort. And that proved that, because that's what we had done in Dublin Midwest. And also with the right candidate. Sorry, I don't want that's a, you know, you have to be, you could get your vote out in, you know, 27 days a week, but if you don't have the right candidate, that's not going to work for you. So yeah, we, you know, with the right candidate as well.
Practically, what's the difference there? Is it just an effort on the doors? Is it reminding people to get out and vote? Is it something as simple as giving people lifts to polling stations?
It's all of that. And it's reminding people that if they don't come out and vote for us, well then, say in my case, like, the office I have in Balbriggan will close, and the office I have in Swords will close, because it's only there because I get support from the people that I'm fortunate enough to represent. So it's explaining to people that your vote is important, because you're actually casting your vote for a community activist, you're casting your vote for change, someone who'll be a strong voice for you, and letting people know that you will be that vehicle for them. But that they need to come out for you as well. And it's not that our voters were complacent. But when you come as a community activist and you're active there and you're in your own community, you know, people sometimes don't make the distinction between getting elected and not getting elected. And you've got to go and talk to people where they're at and let them see that you won't just turn up for them when you're looking for a vote. I mean, I'll give you an example. I'm not going to name the person, right, but I did a piece of media on the Thursday before the 2020 election. Remember, the election was on Saturday. And I spoke to a fairly prominent TD in another party, one of the two formerly known as the two big parties. And this person told me that they were winding up. It was Thursday afternoon. They're like, well, sure, look, as much as can be done has been done now. There's not an awful lot more we can do at this stage. And I got into the car driving home and I rang my husband and I said, I don't know how this person is so relaxed. I don't know how they're so relaxed. I mean, I still have to get back to people in this estate, that estate, and I'm listing off us, and we still didn't go back to this place, and we've got to go back there, and we're not doing the trains tomorrow morning. We're going to go up and do the trains tomorrow morning, and we're doing the get out the vote on Saturday, and we're da, da, da. And I had loads and loads of stuff that I still had to do, and I rang my husband and I said, I think, are we after missing a trick on this? Because these people all seem very chill about their position and very chill. I was still at that
stage.
So
you were worried that you'd kind of done the wrong work rather than them not done enough?
No, I was worried that they had somehow managed to cover more ground than I had. I couldn't figure that out because I had a much bigger team. And I had teams based in all over Fingal. I had a bigger team than they had, but they just had a very, like, a relaxed attitude to it. They're like, well, we've done enough now. You know, it's Thursday afternoon, not an awful lot more we can do between now and when the polls open. Whereas I was focused on, okay, we literally have this many hours left and we need to get up and get out and stay at it. And we stayed at it and we stayed offering people lifts to the polling stations, you know, really encouraging people to come out and vote. And we stayed doing that until, and I remember the day of that election, it was horrible. It was raining, it was cold, it was awful. And we still stayed out, wrapping doors till, I'd say, probably about 7:30, and then we called it a day.
You mentioned that the dogs on the street knew in December that an election was going to be called. The election was called a couple of weeks later, and here's how it went.
This morning I informed the Cabinet that I'll ask the President to dissolve the 32nd Dáil. I'll travel to the Arras to do so this afternoon. I've always said that the election should happen at the best time for the country. Now is that time.
I'm not voting for anyone, I'm just staying in bed, yeah?
No, you have to go up and vote. Vote for Sinn Féin, yeah?
As the election campaign reaches its climax, join us for Primetime, the Leaders' Debate.
Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin go head-to-head on Primetime in a bid to win your vote. They'll debate the big issues facing the country and try to convince you that their policies are the ones to address them.
Obviously, this election was all about change. Sinn Féin went to the people and we convinced them in very, very large numbers that we are the alternative, that we are the vehicle for change.
Once policies and principles don't change overnight, and that for any government to sustain, the policy platform has to be coherent. There has to be synergy.
What I said during the campaign and what my party said in the campaign wasn't a tactic or a strategy, it was what we honestly believed. And for us, a coalition with Sinn Féin is not an option.
So Louise, 8 months in the difference. Mm-hmm. You go from the low of May 2019 to what happened in early February 2020. What actually changed? Was it, you've touched on this idea of getting out the vote, but was there anything else? Was it just grassroots organisation, or was there a conversation at a higher part of the party?
Well, no, it was grassroots organisation, and that was a huge factor. And it's not something that gets, you know, headlines. It's not very flash, you know, meeting in rooms at you know, in offices at 6 o'clock, 6:30. Right, who has the leaflets? Right, where are we doing now? Yep, go on, let's get out. You know, that bread and butter work, that continues, and it has to be done. So that was a huge element to it. And I think we sort of changed our messaging somewhat. We didn't change our policies because our policies were the same. But instead of leading with the critique of the government, we would have come out with our own solutions. So I was the party spokesperson on health in the last Dáil, and instead of going out and describing to people what the waiting lists were like, which I didn't need to do because, the numbers on the lists were getting close to 1 million. So there wasn't a person really that didn't understand what it was like to be on a hospital waiting list. What I did instead was I said, well, look, here's Colista. This is our single integrated waiting list management system. This is our proposal. This is our alternative. This is what we think could and should be done. This is what we think would work. And if you gave us a chance, this is the type of policy that we would like to see implemented. And, you know, that policy was there. I use that as an example. It's long-standing party policy.
Is that kind of an idea that the entire campaign became more positive, more policy focused, rather than maybe the 2019 being about the government isn't doing well, vote for us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was much more policy focused, definitely. And then, you know, I think the other thing was the people got to see the team that were behind Mary Lou. So it wasn't all focus on the leader, although in any election campaign it is serious, serious focus on the leader. You know, you heard that there with the leadership debates from which they excluded my own party leader, and that mistake was subsequently corrected, much to our benefit, I think. But that's Sin Scalella, as they say. But no, I think we got a chance then to showcase our team. And, you know, I mean, Leo Varadkar had said that he'd come out and he'd said, well, look, here's my team, you know, and he's naming all his ministers, and here's the lads that are going to be with me. And, you know, Micheál was kind of looking around trying to put a team together and whatever else. And then Mary Lou was like, OK, well, I have a team, and here's the team that are behind me. And people got to see what we would do if we got the chance to govern.
The personalities, the likes of yourself in health and Eoin O'Brien in housing, you feel like people were able to kind of connect with the issues through party spokespeople?
Absolutely, and Kathleen Funchen and Donica O'Leary, and, you know, let people see that there's a layer, that there was a layer of you know, like a front bench there ready, and that we had, you know, solutions, that we had looked at a different way of managing, because it's not about managerialism. We looked at a different way of, you know, delivering for people, and we looked at a different way, an alternative, an actual real worked out alternative to the politics of the sitting government. And we went out to people and said, well, look, so obviously people will be very, very familiar with Mary Lou and with Pearce. And then we said, well, look, OK, so there's other people there. We have a front bench, and these are our policies. And I think we were able to show a very strong front bench team. And I think that stood to us.
You said it was another story, but it was actually my next question. How important were some of the things that we heard in that clip? Mary Lou being excluded initially from the prime time leaders debate, the kind of the internet memery around things that Darren Conway skit went viral, had a couple of 100,000 views in the end, maybe even more, just about, you know, vote for Sinn Féin are getting us all gaffes, that kind of thing. The Guardian wrote a piece afterwards where they talked about the impact of something like TikTok on the election, where young people were spurred by viral TikToks to go out and vote. How important was it this just the confluence of everything, kind of every breaking ball went for Sinn Féin in a way, aside from your own internal party work?
And that'd be brilliant, though, if you could just sit back and go, we'll just wait for every breaking ball going our way, lads. Let's just abandon campaigning and start praying instead. No, you can't. You've got to put a lot of effort into, like, the result that we got, we didn't get for nothing.
Oh, no, but was there...
We got it off the back of a lot of campaigning.
But was there a sense in the party that this stuff is going for us, you know.
You could see that. No, you could get that on the doors. There was positivity there, absolutely. And I don't know if you were at the demonstration that left from Parnell Square for early childhood educators and childcare workers. And, like, we went out to that. I was blown away by the reception that Mary Lou got. We came out and around, and there was just hundreds of women around. They were chanting her name, and they were looking for selfies, and they were and you could see it in things like that. But then, in the middle of an election campaign, everything is about the vote. I mean, it's at the end of the day, you know, people can be nice to you. And if you knock on doors as much as I do, you know, people are basically polite. You know, they're not going to run you off the door. They're going to smile, take the leaflet, and you walk away thinking, geez, I don't know if they would vote for me now or not. But sometimes you can't get that. You can't get that from people. So that was a very real manifestation of it. And we saw it that day, and it was kind of like, okay, geez, maybe there's something here, you know, maybe this is turning. And you could feel it. You could get a sense of it. But you never trust that, you know. The only thing you trust is the mark on the ballot paper at the end of the day. That's the only thing you can trust. But there was a sense that there was a bit of positivity there, and that there was a momentum starting to pick up.
There was a lot of marks on a lot of ballot papers when results day came around. Donegal O'Leary was the first TD elected, and then 9 of the 10 highest first preference getters were. Members of Sinn Féin. Only Michael Healy-Ray interrupts that list. Denise Mitchell led the country with 21,000. But among all of that, there was a discussion about why Sinn Féin ran so few candidates. There was talk of candidates still being deselected 3 weeks beforehand. Was Sinn Féin ready for this election?
We were. We had the policies. We had the personnel. We had the campaign.
If you only ran 42 candidates, did you have the personnel?
We were ready for the campaign, all right. I don't think we were ready for the extent of the success. I mean, and look, as I said, I'd be an idiot if I was sitting here saying, oh, we anticipated it, but we just didn't. Like, come on, you know and I know. Like, you can see that we didn't anticipate the level of support, but it became fairly obvious from almost, like, I would say the second or the third day of the campaign that support was there for us, and you could feel it start to pick up and you could feel that momentum starting to build.
Did you feel in the party then, once you realised that momentum, did you think, we've missed a trick here by only running 42 candidates?
In the middle of an election campaign, no. Because you don't think about that. You think about who has the leaflets, what time am I meeting them at, do I have to go into town to do media, do I have to come back out, what time are we meeting, are we doing the trains this morning, have I got enough clothes to keep me warm in the freezing cold? Those are the things you think about in the middle of an election. But and by that stage, look, we had the candidates that we had selected, and the key was to get as many of those elected as we possibly could, and I think we did get as many of those elected as we possibly could. In fact, we got almost all, not quite all, but almost all of them elected. So, you know, it was, you got that sense that there was, as I say, the momentum picking up, but you wouldn't be complacent about it either. You still, as I say, I mean, I kept working right till the very last. We all did, because you can't take your vote for granted.
When you mentioned that kind of anticipation of the level of support, you think back to some of the stories that you heard on the day. Patricia Ryan was away on holidays. Violet Ann Wynne was only selected a couple of weeks beforehand and had only got a couple of hundred votes in the council elections the year before. I think Johnny Mytham was the same, ended up with about 19,000. I mean, afterwards, did you all kind of stand around and think, what just happened here?
No, I don't think we did. I'm trying to remember. It was a good feeling. Like, it was a good day out for us. You know, we had experienced, you know, like, we were just talking about 2019 and about the local election. Like, we had experienced a bad day out. So when we had a good day out, we really appreciated it. It did come as, I suppose it came as a shock in some respects, but you could feel it starting to happen. I think for individual TDs it's different. So you can look at and I say I've only ever fought two election campaigns, right? But you get quite blinkered and quite focused on your own area, because you have to be, because that's the job in hand at that time. So I think you're kind of looking broadly and you see the results coming in and you're thinking, Jenny, this is great. But I mean, and obviously we saw the exit poll the night before, but I'm a bit, I'm not a pessimist, right? But I'm an optimist with experience. So I tend to be a little bit, which is, I wouldn't take anything for granted. Even that night, the exit poll was announced and my husband was my dear, I could see him kind of sitting back going, well, that's the job done. And I was like, oh God, you know, but I said, that's just an average, Ciarán, you know, that might not translate for us. And he's like, oh, just relax, will you? Maybe I'm not the best person for this. I'm not trying to focus it all on me at all. But yeah, no, we did when the results were in and when we saw the extent of it and when we met and we reflected on it. Yeah, we were not shocked, but yeah, it was a very pleasant surprise to see that we had succeeded in so many constituencies.
And then the call a day, were you thinking we left seats on the table there?
Of course, you know, you could see that there were areas. I mean, there was one area where there wasn't a Sinn Féin candidate, where people were writing Sinn Féin on the bottom of the ballot paper. So yeah, I mean, I'd be an idiot now if I thought you would believe. No, we were fine with that. We absolutely knew. No, because we're looking at areas where we could have had, we got one candidate elected. I mean, Denise Mitchell being a case in point, you know, the highest vote of any TD, and there were plenty who could quite comfortably and easily have brought a running mate in. But like, you have to celebrate the success as well. You know, you couldn't, like, there were so many people who got elected, really, really good people who'd been activists for a very long time, some of whom had, as you say, lost their council seats. But there were so many of those, it was hard not to be pleased and happy with the result. And you see, you know, you're looking around and thinking, Jenny, you know, there'd be, you know, a good few more of us now in the Dáil, and you know, like, that was a good thing. Yeah, we were pleased. I mean, of course you were, like, you couldn't not be. And the obvious thing, yeah, we did leave seats behind us. We know that we did. And Mary Lou has spoken about this. Actually, she spoke about it down at our meeting recently there in Liberty Hall. And she just said, look, the amount of people who have come up and still to this day will come up to you in the street and go, are you going to run more candidates next time? And you get to the stage where you just have to stop trying to explain it or justify it. Just put your two hands in the air, palms facing out, and go, right, lads, that's it. We will not make that mistake again. Sinead.
One thing that it has done, you've mentioned it a number of times, Sinn Féin has mentioned it a number of times over the last 2 years, is that the two larger parties historically are now two of the three mid-sized parties in the Dáil. What that does for Sinn Féin, though, is it readjusts your expectations. You're polling really well in the opinion polls. You're now expected to be at least part of the next government, if not the outright leaders of the next government. What would be a good election for Sinn Féin if an election was called for next week?
Well, to maintain and to consolidate the position that we have in the polls now, that would be a very good election for us. To have a campaign that was fought on policy would be a very, very good election campaign for us, because we'd actually get a chance to have proper debates in relation to our policies and to critique and engage with the policies of the two parties formerly known as the big ones. To maintain what we have in the polls. If you ask me for a number, I won't give you one, because those numbers that you think, sure, nobody will remember that. Everybody will remember it after the next election. So I wouldn't put a number on it. But the polling that we are seeing at the moment, and if you see, we are consolidating our position at every stage. You might step back a small bit, but those are not the polls that matter. Of course, there is only one poll that matters.
You're sounding very like the Taoiseach here, that there's only one poll that matters.
But he's not wrong. There is. But having said that, if we were able to maintain what we have in the polls at the minute, or close thereto, that would be a very good day out for us.
If we assume that the Dáil is going to be somewhere around 170 seats, will Sinn Féin be targeting an outright majority?
But every party goes into an election targeting an outright majority.
But you have to have the candidates.
Exactly. And you want to maximise the number. So we haven't started the process of candidate selection as yet. And we will be doing that. I think you'd be foolish not to, given what's going to happen on the 15th of December. I think everybody's kind of bracing themselves for maybe that not going well, or maybe that not. It's very unusual. It's never happened before in the history of this state. So nobody knows how that's going to go. It's quite an odd thing that we would have a changeover by prior arrangement in that way. But sure, look, we'll see what happens with that. And we will start the process of candidate selection, and we will run a sufficient number of candidates to ensure that we get the benefit from the vote, and we won't be leaving any seats behind us next time.
And then if you don't get a majority, who in the Dáil might you be happy enough sitting with in coalition?
I suppose you have to look at the numbers. There might be people that you'd look at and think, yeah, I'd be comfortable enough in government with them. But if they don't bring the numbers, well, then sure. All the chats and cups of tea in the world wouldn't make any difference. It's got to be someone you could negotiate a programme for government with, a Republican programme for government, a programme for government focused on equality, a programme that will deliver the change that we see that people really want. Some of that comes down to numbers, because it depends on how many numbers we have, whether or not we're in the driving seat. I hope we are. And it'll be up to other parties then to see if they want to be part of a change agenda, if they want to be part of a change government. Well, then, we've said we'll talk to anyone, and we will. We made that clear at the last election, and we'll be making that clear, I would imagine, again. Our members will want us to talk to anyone. They want to see us in government. Our supporters want to see us in government. It behoves us to talk to all and every party. You wouldn't know till you see the numbers what sort of negotiations those are going to be. I have some small experience as negotiating wage agreements with employers. It's down to strength. It's down to numbers, and also people that you can have that discussion with, and that you can hammer out a programme for government that will deliver the change agenda that we have at our core.
Great. Well, thanks to Louise O'Reilly for being our guest today. The podcast is produced by myself, Paul Hosford, and Danny McConnell. On sound and editing today is Declan Conlon. Join us next time for another episode of Let Me Tell You from the Irish Examiner. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.